The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
My first guest this morning has gone car-free in a southeast city. Sive O'Neill is an environmentalist and researcher in climate policy, and she sold her car and bought an e-bike to get around Waterford. She's 6 months in and she joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning to chat about how it's going. How's it going, Sive?
It's going really well, thanks, Orla.
Good stuff.
I have no regrets at all.
Good stuff. And it's good to hear from you this morning. I'll have to ask you the crucial question, though, because I did a 40-kilometre cycle on the Blue Way in County Tipperary last week. And I then went to get on my bike, as it's getting into the nice weather, you know, to cycle into my workplace. And I had to get off that bike within 20 seconds as my sit bones and muscles could not take it. How is that part of your anatomy?
Well, I suppose just to wind back a little bit, I would describe myself as an everyday cyclist.
Okay.
Sometimes they're called utility cycling.
Okay.
So it's not like I am out there on the by roads in all the Lycra. I wouldn't even be fit enough for some of those long cycles, to be honest with you, Orla. And my e-bike isn't the kind of bike that is suitable for long distances. It's actually a fold-up bike, so the kind of design of it, it wouldn't really be comfortable over a long distance. You'd get all kinds of aches and pains.
Okay, I think that's
so. I would go on the Greenway regularly on it, but not the whole way to Dungarvan, and my battery wouldn't take me all the way back in any case.
Okay.
So I'm more interested in like the kind of journeys that we often do by car that we could do by bicycle. So for example, 80% of the trips we take by car are under 10 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And now, leaving out the rural roads that wouldn't necessarily be safe to cycle on, but a lot of those trips are actually done in urban areas or in suburban areas,
mm-hmm.
if you think about it, trips to work, to school, to the shops, whatever. And these are exactly the kind of trips that I think that many of us could make by bicycle if we had better infrastructure, but also if we just wrapped our head around the idea that it's healthier, it's enjoyable. E-bikes take all the work out of those hills. Like, honestly, I don't think I could get up some of the hills in Waterford.
Oh, I can imagine.
Without a battery.
Was that part of the decision when you had the light bulb moment that you were getting rid of your car? Was the e-bike a definite? Like, you never thought, oh, I'll just do the regular push bike?
Well, I already cycled a lot in Waterford and I had a push bike, an ordinary bike, and it's perfectly adequate. But the difference with the e-bike is that I can take all the sort of mental obstacles out of the way. They would be hills, wind, getting sweaty on the bike. So sometimes that's a big factor
mm-hmm.
in people's choices not to cycle. They feel that they don't want to turn up to work or an event kind of looking sweaty and
yeah,
hot
sure.
and bothered. But with an e-bike, you don't have to exert yourself to the same degree and you don't have to worry about turning up. Also, the e-bike, because it can take a heavier load, doesn't really make any difference. I pack up my panniers with whatever I need, whether it's, you know, rain gear, whether it's my shopping, whether it's a nicer pair of shoes to change into when I get to my destination, bags of makeup and hairbrushes. You know, I mean, I literally bring loads of gear with me that I wouldn't otherwise necessarily
carry. So there is a bit more prep than, like, I do an awful lot of commuting. So there is a huge amount of stuff in my car, but it stays in my car. So do you feel you have a little bit more prep with the e-bike, bringing stuff in your panniers and thinking about the next day?
Well, not if I'm just going to the shops.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to Dublin, to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So, for example, I was in Dublin for a couple of days. I generally bring my bike on the train. Now, I don't have to. I could manage without it because I can, you know, use the Lewis and whatever. But I do find that taking journeys by public transport and anything that requires an overnight, yes, I do have to kind of plan my journey. I do have to plan my journey for sure. But that's a very small inconvenience.
Yeah.
It's a small inconvenience. And basically what we are trapped by when we rely on the car is the sense that everything should be as convenient as having the car in the driveway with all your gear inside. And you never have to worry about anything except to top it up with fuel.
Yes.
And that is a kind of an indulgence that I don't think, frankly, we can afford to continue with in a climate crisis. And I've obviously been very active in that area for a long time, Orla. It's been my career, it's my passion. I'm deeply concerned about the environment and what is happening to it. I'm also deeply concerned about the fact that our towns and streets are cluttered with cars, mm-hmm. making it impossible for children to walk and cycle mm-hmm. safely to school. They don't have the independence and freedom that I had when I was growing up in an urban area. And I think a solution to that is to make cycling much easier and to encourage everyone to kind of give it a go. Mm. But the other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, very, very often cycling is presented as a kind of, you must do this to be a good person, or you must do this to be kind of fixing the climate. But the reality is that it's a much more enjoyable lifestyle. And mm-hmm. that's one of the things you rarely hear about. I enjoy my life so much better. I'm free of the car. I don't have to worry about car parking, fines, tickets, parking fees, you name it, tolls and everything else. I do have to adapt to kind of slower travel. But having made that change, I'm used to it now, and it's not a big deal. I don't think about the length of a journey on the train because I always have something to listen to, a book to read, or work to do on the train. So it doesn't matter to me if it's a half an hour or an hour longer than it would be by car.
And what about
you can do nothing when you're driving. You can only look at the screen in front of you.
Oh, like I say, always say, it's such a waste of my time, the amount of driving I have to do. Tell me about your own safety. I know, and I know what you mean about children. Like, when I think about the amount of cycling I did in my little village in Wexford growing up, and my child now lives in that same village, and I can't even imagine her on the roads on a bike. How do you feel about your safety in a city as well? I've cycled a bit around the city of Waterford. There's some bike lanes, not a massive amount of bike lanes. How are you with safety wise?
Well, I think that there's an awful lot of work to be done mm-hmm. to provide safer infrastructure, and that includes protected cycle lanes.
Yes.
Safer junctions. Roundabouts are particularly dangerous. I'm involved with the Waterford Bicycle Users Group, and we did a little survey recently of some of the bigger roundabouts on the edge of the city. And they're very dangerous for cyclists and pedestrians. Okay. They're far too big. Your lines of visibility are not good. And there's too much fast traffic that makes it hard for pedestrians and cyclists to navigate around these roundabouts safely. So the County Council really needs to progress its plans to roll out cycling infrastructure faster. And yet all the debate is about actually, you know, undoing some of the things they've already done, mm-hmm. which I find very disappointing. Cycling is one of the least cost ways we can improve people's health and make our towns and cities healthier and more accessible for everybody. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the driving lobby is a bit stuck in a way of thinking that I think is a shame, you know, because we're losing out on so much. I mean, certainly, you know, I spent a week there with my daughters in the Netherlands, and, you know, the lifestyle people can enjoy when you can get from A to B easily in a town and city without traffic noise, which is a big factor. We never talk about that. The severance, as in the way that cars divide up the streets, making it harder to cross from one side to the other. The pollution, the risk, the hazard, the just the kind of awfulness of it. I mean, there's no comparison. And parts of Waterford are great and parts are really terrible. So we have a lot of work to do. And I would love to see the County Council is really taking more of an interest in the cycling infrastructure and ensuring that there's a plan to implement and fund it and make sure that all the new cycle lanes are rolled out as fast as possible.
You wrote about this in the Irish Times this week, during the week, and you talk about habit stacking. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the idea there is I thought about how the change had actually taken place for me, as in I made the decision to get rid of my car and I was okay with that. But I noticed that for the first month or so, there was a bit of, oh, no, I've no car. I'm going to have to do that. But I'm going to have to get on the bike, you know, even though I had this e-bike.
And you'd no choice, really, because you'd no car. It wasn't as if you'd
bought the car and
the bike at the same. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But over time, I noticed that mental effort, shall we say, just vanished. So then I started thinking about, well, what can we do to make people choose the bike over the car? Because a lot of people, frankly, can't just get rid of their car. They need to have it for some journeys, right? But they probably own a bike. So what would help choose the bike over the car if you were making a certain trip, say you were going to the shops. Well, firstly, you could think about parking your car further away from where you live.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, just literally not in front of the house, but just a little bit down the road or something, and having the bike ready to go, okay. Maybe even, you know, at your door with all the panniers and locks and keys and everything ready to go so that it's your default choice and you make it really easy for yourself. Another thing I would suggest is that people who have two cars in their families consider, and this might not be an option for many people, but people are doing this, like people are using their wallets to make this choice all the time, to get rid of one car and instead invest in a cargo bike. So you can buy e-cargo bikes, and these are the bikes with big buckety things with little shelters and what have you in front. And you can take heavier loads. You can even carry small children. You see these all the time in Dublin and in the Netherlands. They're really, really common. You don't see too many of them in Waterford yet, but they're a fantastic alternative to the car. The kids love being cycled around. They just love it. They're like little puppies. They just love the air kind of washing past their ears, and they just enjoy it. And so that's an alternative to the second car is, you know, and by giving yourself these choices, you're kind of creating new habits and new lifestyles for yourself and for your family.
Yeah.
And usually people don't look back, frankly. I've never heard of anyone say, oh, that was such a bad decision, or, you know, we're going to go back to the car.
And is this Unless it for you, Sive? Are you going for this?
Well, not necessarily, because like I don't know what life is going to bring, and it may be that I need to have a car. That doesn't worry me at all. Like I'm not some kind of a zealot in that sense. If it's a practical necessity, like for instance, I know I'm going to be starting some new work shortly, and that is going to require trips. Whether it will make sense for me to buy a car or just rent a car, or whether I'll be able to do them all by public transport, it remains to be seen. There's no problem. I have no mental barriers about that. The issue is that I try to make the most I can of every day, getting outside, getting fresh air. It's good for my mental health. It's good for my physical health. And these are trips I can easily make by bike. I don't need a car to go to the shops. I don't need a car to go to the hairdressers. I don't need a car to go to the train station. You know, I can make all those trips by bike, and I do, and I don't regret it.
Great to hear that. Well, you can read about Sive's experience on the Irish Times website. She wrote an article for the newspaper during the week. She is based in Waterford, and she is an environmentalist and researcher in climate policy. Enjoy your e-bikes. I got a go on them when Wexford County Council was releasing their e-bikes that they rent in Wexford Town. And I really liked it. I really enjoyed the, like you said, suddenly a hill was no longer a hill. So enjoy all that riding in the fresh air, Sive. Thanks a million for talking to me this morning.
Great. Thanks, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's Sunday morning on Beat. Clocks have gone forward and it's Mother's Day. But if panic has set in on hearing me say it's Mother's Day, well, I'm here to help. The Donkey Sanctuary Ireland is based in Liscarroll in Mallow in County Cork, and they're making you the best son or daughter in the world with their donkey adoption plan. Joe Minahan is the marketing and fundraising person at the Donkey Sanctuary of Ireland. They're based all over Europe, and she joins me on the phone this morning. You're very welcome, Joe.
Hiya, morning, Ola.
What a nice job you have.
It is. Yeah, it's lovely to take a nice stroll around there as well at the open farm.
Oh,
it's a lovely spot.
What is it?
When the sun is shining.
There's just something about donkeys. I was only watching a video a few days ago about a donkey who'd been raised by this little girl, and they hadn't seen each other in years, and he recognises her, and I just shed a tear. There's just something so innocent and beautiful about them.
Yeah, no, they're very emotional as well, animals, donkeys, and they're really, really intelligent as well. Yeah, there's a lot to understand about them. They're just very affectionate, and they love a good scratch, and they love, you know, people visiting the farm.
Brilliant. And your farm, as we said, is in Liscarroll, in Mallow in County Cork, so not too far away from the southeast. And you have a visitor centre there as well, so people can visit during the week and meet all the donkeys.
We do, yeah. We're open so Friday to Monday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. each weekend, and the visitor centre on site there, yeah, and with the gift shop in there, so you know you can take like keepsakes away, lots of donkey themed gifts, and games and a lot of great stuff in there, actually. So it's definitely worth having a look after you've had a walk around.
Okay, so some people have woken up in a panic realising that it's Mother's Day and no restaurant has been booked and there is no rashers in the house to make the breakfast. But you're offering the ability to adopt a donkey this morning as a Mother's Day pack.
Yeah, and it's actually a great last minute gift. So, you know, once you adopt, actually the easiest way to do it is on our website, and you can download a certificate right away, and that's personalised as well with the person it's for. Brilliant. And then we do send a sort of personalised pack in the post as well. So you can wait for that, but you can download your certificate straight away. But in the pack, you get the certificate, a nice pencil sketch print, which I think are just lovely. They're all done but sort of by local artists.
Lovely.
And then a story of the donkey you've chosen to adopt. And then after 6 months as well, you get an update about your donkey.
Brilliant.
So it's just to see what they've been up to.
So it looks like you've been planning this for weeks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You're sorted. Now, when you click on the donkeysanctuary.ie and you click on adopt now, it asks you to choose a personality and you've loads of options there. There's brave and calm and confident, food loving, fun loving, loves attention, a performer, playful and timid. I'm going to have to go for timid, even though I really want to go for loves attention, but timid makes me a bit sad. And then when it that comes up with four results, so you can pick from those. So I have Beauty, Echo, Julianne, who I really like the look of. Julianne almost looks like a horse. And
she's lovely, lovely.
Is she gorgeous?
Actually, yeah.
And Roma is an option as well. So they're all, you know, their own donkeys, really. They all have their own personalities.
They are. They're really, really unique, actually, donkeys in general. And like, yeah, we have 11 adoption donkeys there. Living at our site in Liscarroll. And honestly, each one of them just does have such a different character. And because obviously they've all been rescued, they've really all come such a long way as well. And it's just lovely to see them grow and thrive in our care there. So, you know, Roma has really come a long way in the last 2 years. Their confidence, and yeah, it's just, and you can come and meet them as well. So if you do adopt a donkey, you can come and meet them. And get to know them and give a good scratch over the fence.
And when they come to the Donkey Sanctuary of Ireland, they stay there for life, do they?
They do. They're guaranteed a home for life, yeah.
Lovely stuff. Yeah. Now, do you have a favourite donkey, Joe?
It's hard to say. They're all lovely. We have so many in our care, but I think with our adoption donkeys, Snowdrop there was introduced not too long ago. He's a white donkey, really.
Snowdrop.
Really stands out.
Snowdrop has the longest ears I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, he's lovely, and he loves attention.
Lovely.
Mary as well, she's a lovely donkey. She's just an absolute sweetheart.
See her here. She's a real typical donkey, isn't she?
Yeah. She's gorgeous. Just got a real sweet face, I think.
Now, you're missing out a donkey here. I'm quite surprised, because you have a donkey called Orla Jane. And me being Orla, I think I would like to adopt Orla Jane.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people actually tend to do. You know, if they know sort of a Mary in their life, they'll go for Mary or the theme, you know, Snowdrop. He's super popular at Christmas as well.
Oh,
so it's just nice, I think, to have that.
Yeah, it's lovely. So listen, if you've forgotten the Mother's Day present and you're looking for something to do, and, you know, support a good cause as well, thedonkeysanctuary.ie is the place to go now. And it's really easy to adopt. And you've events on over the summer and everything as well. I heard you have a Teddy's Bear picnic for little kids and lots of stuff going on.
Yep. And we have an Easter egg hunt as well over Easter. So
Brilliant.
We're actually for the full 2 weeks of Easter, which is great. So we've got sort of an egg hunt there that you can come in and get your trail sheet for. Again, all goes to straight back into the donkeys and the care of the donkeys and donkeys across Ireland as well. And then in the summer, our Teddy Bears picnic is a huge event, always super popular. So yeah, definitely book ahead for that one.
Excellent stuff. Well, thedonkeysanctuary.ie is the website to go to, and you'll see all those lovely donkeys. And it's such a well thought out area as well, with walkways and vantage points to see the donkeys and historical sites around Liscarroll as well. Joe, thanks so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Grill. I'd say there's some people breathing a sigh of relief right now. thedonkeysanctuary.ie. Joe, thanks a million.
Thank you so much.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill here on Beat, and hurrah! The clocks went forward this morning and we are officially marking at least the start of summertime. Well, while we're all enjoying that extra hour of sunlight this evening, spare a thought for the staff of the Irish Museum of Time in Waterford City. They had to adjust, wait for it, 600 clocks to mark the start of Daylight Saving Mode. Cliona Purcell is the curator at Waterford Treasures Museum, and she joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning to talk about this massive task. Cliona, were you the delegator or were you involved as well?
There was quite a team of us, no, for sure. So curators, facilities managers, volunteers, you name it.
Oh, I'm very impressed. So you did a few of the clocks as well, did you?
Yes, no, we did. It's kind of an all hands on deck situation twice a year, every year.
It's funny. And I suppose it's a real conversation about having a museum of time, because it's a long time since I've had to get up whenever the clocks go back or go forward and actually change a clock, because my phone does that for me now. And I don't think there's a clock on my house that I have to take down and change it. It's a pity in a way, isn't it?
I think it's much the same. I don't think I've ever actually had a clock that I had to change in my own life. But some of the staff, I think, find it a bit nostalgic, sort of a bit grounding, essentially, to have to do it.
Yeah.
But no, it's definitely something that we've kind of forgotten about.
I definitely will have the clock wrong in my car for the next 6 months or so. So I'll just leave it until
I get
to
October. Oh, the oven is the other one.
Oh, and the oven. I forgot about the oven. Yeah. But yeah, it's a funny task. What kind of clocks are we talking about in the Museum of Time? Like, there's over 600. Are they very different in the way that they need to be changed or need to be handled?
You know, we have a lot of them, obviously, and they're all a little bit different. So we like to say that they've all got their own little characters, essentially, little quirks. So we have to wind them every week. Our clocks are what are known as 8-day clocks.
Wow.
So that means they keep time for 8 days, which means that once a week you have to go in and wind them all. And gosh, that's a 3-hour job by itself, you know. So putting the clocks forward is not too complicated, because you literally just have to take the hour hand, which is very, very delicate. So it has to be done quite carefully. But you just take that hour hand and you push it forward 1 hour. The autumn is slightly more complicated, because clocks don't like to go backwards. They only like to go forwards.
Ah, okay.
So in the autumn, we have to go forward 11 hours.
You have to go forward. Oh, I get you.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can't push them back. You could break it if you pushed it back.
Exactly, yeah. So the problem with clocks is it's simple in principle, but in practice it's a little bit more complex. So winding a clock, for instance, you're really just winding it, but if you overwind, you can do pretty serious damage. So it's the small things that will damage these pieces.
Okay, so you've got some of the oldest Irish clocks there, but you also have some pieces from around the world.
We do. So the museum is set in this incredible building. It's a Methodist church from 1884. And on the ground floor, we have all of our Irish clocks, basically. So we have, right from the earliest ones in the 17th century up to sort of some more recent additions. But then on the top floor, we have our international collection. So we have clocks from America, from the UK, from France, Germany, Japan, you know, for the Turkish market. It's kind of all covered up there.
Wow. And you've got a few prize possessions as well. Is there any in particular that you have a little bit of a grow for?
Ooh, you know, I kind of like the quirky ones. I'm a little bit unusual that way. So we have one, for instance, called a Tease Mate, which some listeners may or may not remember. But it's from the 1950s and 60s. They retailed these clocks that had a kettle attached, and you set it the night before, so that when your alarm would go off in the morning, you'd have a pot of hot tea on the clock as well.
Oh, nice.
Now, as I'm sure you can appreciate, incredibly dangerous. You know, it's an electric clock. But
so you're not doing the tea every night.
No, but I think probably one of the most important pieces we have in the museum is our Clement clock. So our Clement clock dates to 1656. And we like to say it's the first clock in the world that ever went tick-tock, because it has the oldest known anchor escapement, which is a very complicated way of saying the thing that makes the clock go tick-tock, basically.
Okay, wow. It's, you know, you could really nerd out about clocks, couldn't you? Like, it's kind of grabs a hold of people. I suppose it's the whole idea of time and how people, you know, read the time in years gone by. It's so interesting to see how people have had them in their houses.
Oh, absolutely. I think we have people that have come in and spent 8 hours in the museum. They've gone out for lunch and they've come back. But even people who sort of are, you know, dragged along by a husband who's interested in clocks kind of find a little bit of the spirit of it kind of takes them, I think, when they go in there, because I think it's not something we really think about anymore, you know, these sort of mechanical clocks. And they're sort of, in their day, they were known as the supercomputers of their day, essentially. But today it's, you know, it's nostalgic, but it's also this incredible work of art that is also a machine. And people do really find it, I think, quite inspiring.
Yeah, and when I'm thinking about it, I don't think we have any clocks in our house. But if I was to have one, it would be, like you said, for a piece of art or something to do with interiors. I wouldn't necessarily be looking up at it to look at the time because we have our phones and, as you said, the clock on the cooker, unfortunately, that I will have to change. But it's
I just leave it. 6 months time, just it'll leave be, it. You know.
Yeah, it's sad kind of in a way that, you know, as museums go, you're not going to be dragging the oven in 50 years' time to show how we looked at the clock or the iPhone or Android, really, will you?
Oh, you never know. We've got one member of staff who only recently got rid of his Nokia 3310. We've been threatening to put it in a case.
You should. That would be brilliant.
An icon of the 2000s. You
An
know,
icon of the 2000s. Both a clock and the ability to play Snake as much as you want.
Telling you.
So listen, you're having the International Festival of Time from May 23rd to the 24th. What will happen during that?
We are. So that one's very exciting. So as we said, people are kind of, I think, moving back towards the sort of mechanical watches a little bit. You're sort of starting to see them as a fashion statement these days because they're so expensive. You know, they're so incredibly complex to produce that it's a little bit of a status symbol again now, much as it was when it was first invented. So every year we have the Festival of Time where we bring over about 20 artisan watchmakers from right across Europe. So these people are, you know, really the top of their game in producing these wearable works of art. So we've got people coming from France, from Switzerland, from Germany, from Denmark, you know, from all over really. And some of them are, you know, they're big deals essentially. We've got one guy, his name is Vianney Holter, and he produces these incredible watches which are inspired by space. Oh, wow. And one of them has actually been to space on the arm of William Shatner.
Wow. So. Okay. So that'll be worth a pretty penny, wouldn't it?
About, I think, oh gosh, I could be wrong on this. I think it retails for about a million.
Wow. Okay. So he'll be there and you can get more details on that at waterfordtreasures.com. That festival is on from May 23rd to the 24th and it's called the International Festival of Time at the Waterford Treasures Museum of Time. Cliona, God bless your fingers and all your staff's fingers as well by having to move all those 600 clocks forward by an hour. But I really will be thinking of you at the end of October where you have to move them all forward by 11 hours in order to put it back again. But you really are marking the start of summertime at the Museum of Time in Waterford City. Thanks a million for talking to me this morning.
No, gosh, thank you for taking the time.
That's Cliona Purcell. She's the curator at the Waterford Treasures Museum.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Well, tomorrow is the last day to avail of discounted tickets for one of Carlow Arts Festival's family performances and a few other announced shows as well. The Carlow Arts Festival, of course, takes place every year in June. This year, it's from June the 4th to the 8th. And while the full programme will be released in mid-April, some performances have already confirmed with the option of buying discounted tickets until tomorrow at midnight. There's a family performance as well. It's called An Aunt Called Amy. So if you want to do, you know, it's Mother's Day today and if you're panically thinking of something to buy for your mother in your life, maybe you could avail of this. Well, Benjamin Pershing. Now, Benjamin, you told me how to say your surname and I've forgotten already. So Benjamin Pershing.
Purchet, let's say, but you know what? Benjamin is more than okay. And everybody calls me Benji.
Benji.
If you say Benjamin, people will be like, who? But in Ireland for 10 years now, I'm Benji.
And
I'm happy with
it. And were you ever Benji when you were living in your home country of France?
No, I was Ben.
So people have just decided to call you Benji.
Yeah, day one. And I was like, yeah, okay, go for it.
That's such an Irish thing, Benjamin, to tell you the truth. If you had been wearing a red hat that day, they could have suddenly just called you Red. So Benji is okay. Well, that is Benjamin. We'll give him his full title at least because he is the artistic director, CEO of Carlow Arts Festival. And I don't know whether Benji would suit those titles, Benjamin. And he chats to me this morning and has more details. You're very welcome to the Sunday Grill. The Carlow Arts Festival is always such a feat. And you have been their artistic director since 2021. How has it all been going?
It's been doing really well. I was appointed in 2021. Uh-huh. And my first edition as their artistic director was in 2022.
Okay.
And for many reasons, it was kind of a special edition because that was actually the very first time after COVID.
Oh,
that
of course.
People could come all together and celebrate social moments and performances and events and activities. The festival was in June, indeed, so lockdown was over. But to be honest, June 2022 was a very special one because you could tell that people were absolutely delighted to come together all, again on the grounds of Carlo College, enjoying the music stage and some children activities and everything. And so far, so good.
Lovely
we
stuff.
Are a small team. We are a small but very dedicated team. And I'm always saying we when I'm talking about the festival, not I, because that's a team effort.
Okay, good stuff. Now, you, as we were saying, you have announced some of the programme, not all of them. You've stuff like an Irish folk music duo called Ye Vagabonds, and they're actually from Carlo, aren't they, Ye Vagabonds? They're doing really well for themselves.
Yeah, totally. So they are brothers Brian and Dermot McGloin, and they started their journey in Carlo, where they are. Where they were born. Then they moved to Dublin in 2012, and they are doing extraordinarily well, touring nationally and, of course, even internationally. A few weeks ago, they were in New York at the Irish Arts Center. And so we are hosting their coming back to Carlo Saturday the 7th of June, where they have not performed since 2022.
Okay, good stuff. Now, very few tickets left for that, you were saying to me before we went on air. So have a look at that.
Very few tickets.
Okay, good
left.
Stuff.
Indeed.
Now, you have a family program as well, which is really lovely and a good way to get kids into theatre as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Historically, Carlo Arts Festival has always been very open to families. Let's say it's an event which is family friendly, and we would always have a performance for children and families alongside many activities happening on the ground in Carlo College. And so this year, the performance which we are presenting for children aged from 5 to 8 at Visual, at George Bennett Shaw Theatre, is titled An Aunt Called Amy.
Okay, An Aunt Called Amy, yep.
And that's the story of a very good aunt who would month on month designated as the best employee because she's collecting a lot of leaves.
Okay.
and we understand the reason why she's working so hard. There is something which he's trying not to think about. It's a lovely, lovely piece, which I saw at the Arc in Dublin, which is a wonderful venue for children. It's written and performed by Julie Charkey and directed by Raymond Keane. And there's a family ticket, which is for 4 tickets. So adults, children. So there's a very interesting rate. And in any case, the tickets price are always very reasonable at Carlo Arts Festival.
Yeah. So there's a rate, and then there's 20% off until tomorrow at midnight if you want to check that out. And we haven't announced everything, so it really is until mid-April till we find out what else is happening. But like so many interesting things have happened at the Arts Festival.
So, I mean, the festival remit is to present diverse art forms. Our remit is to have a curated, multidisciplinary series of events, melting circus, visual arts, dance, theatre, spoken word, music. And this year, we'll have many shows which could relate to circus. And one of our first 4 shows, titled Home, is by Limerick-based Fidget Feet Aerial Dance Theatre Company in collaboration with Toby Omoteso, who's an exceptional dancer and choreographer from Carlo again.
Great. Okay, that's brilliant to see so many Carlo people involved as well.
Yeah,
so lots
always.
Of eclectic stuff happening at the Carlo Arts Festival. You can check out some of that programme that's already been announced on carloartsfestival.ie, and there's 20% off until midnight tomorrow if you see anything of interest, and that's where the programme will be as well. And Benjamin is the Artistic Director of Carlo Arts Festival, and thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Beat 102-103 on this Sunday morning. It is Mother's Day. Oh, look at him over there. Big shocked face. He's thinking, Oh no, my mammy.
I'll have you know I'm going to a meal directly after this, so I know exactly what's going on.
Did you book said meal?
No, I'm going for a meal at my sister's house.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what have you done for your mammy today?
I loved her.
Do you want to do a shout out?
Yeah, shout out my mam. Hi, Breeda.
Hi, Breeda. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Brian loves you.
Love you too.
There you go. Let's talk Snow White, okay? Never has a reimagined movie had so much publicity. Bad publicity, that is. I don't even know where to go with it, but so much so that the main star has been given a social media expert because she's very outspoken. And I suppose the whole thing is you're being paid a lot of money to promote this movie. Maybe you need to stay quiet for a while you're on this promotion trail. So, you know?
I don't think so. I think go wild.
Do you?
Well, you know me.
She's so early into her career and she was so, like when she was
I fancy her though.
Do you?
Yeah, I think she's pretty. She replied to me on Twitter once when I had a video, so I think she's cool.
She say to you?
She was like, well, that's really cool.
She did not, Brian.
She did too.
Really?
I promise.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Brian's claim to fame.
Yeah. I think she's a fantastic actor and I think...
She's amazing.
So you'll find even though, like, I'm just looking at IMDb now, it has been review bombed, like, absolutely.
Really?
1.6 rating.
Yeah.
Not correct.
Oh, okay.
Like, not like, look, I'll spoil it now. Wasn't my favourite movie I've ever seen in my entire life. Not 1.6.
Okay. But. Will we listen to a clip?
No.
Why not?
I shrugged my shoulders there.
He's kind of right in a way because the clip I'm going to play, you know, because you know Snow White. You know the story of it.
Yeah.
But sure, look, let's do it. Here we go. There's animals. There's a wood.
My parents always said this forest was a magical place.
Here we go.
Hello? Is there anybody here? What did you think I was?
Nothing.
Ghost.
You'll be safe from the Queen here.
The Queen stole everything from all of us.
I'm gonna need your help.
It's time to restore our kingdom.
Waiting on a wish, holding out for someday. Hoping somehow, some way, there comes a miracle.
Find Snow White.
This is our kingdom, and now we're here to take it back.
You were saying.
I'm sorry, my dear. Did I frighten you?
There you go. And you can imagine that did I frighten you was, of course, the witch. Is it a witch who gives her the apple?
I think so.
Who gives her the apple?
It's like an evil, crouched down old lady.
I always get confused between Snow White and the other one where they get pricked by a spinning wheel and sleep for 100 years.
What's Sleeping that? Beauty?
Sleeping Beauty.
The trick is, if it's the one where they sleep, that would be the sleeping one.
That wouldn't be
I always
good
get
movie.
Mixed up between Snow White and the one where they all get all tangled.
Did we need this in our lives? 1937 is when the first Disney Snow White movie came out. And
you remember
it is,
seeing it in the cinema at the time, Orla?
Yeah, I did, yeah. He always reverts back to the fact that I was born in 1922. But did we need it in our lives?
So this was the interesting predicament that I put to my, actually I said it to this to my mom. This was a genuine thought process that I had the other day. I was comparing Homer's Odyssey and James Joyce's Ulysses,
okay,
and contrasting it to Snow White.
Okay.
Basically what James, I only learned this the other day. I sound like I know about it. I only learned it the other day, so it was interesting to me. Ulysses is based on the Odyssey.
But I didn't know that either.
It's just set in Dublin during one day.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And I'm like, that's pretty cool. Now,
yeah, that is pretty cool.
I obviously haven't listened to it, so I don't know what happens.
Are you sure? Is that fact checked? Are you sure of that?
Yes, it was part at the start of the audiobook. I started listening to it, but the intro was so long, I didn't even get to the start of the book.
So I'm actually of which?
Ulysses. So I'm currently like at minus points of starting the book.
Okay.
But it was an interesting fact. But it made me think that Snow White, when it came out in 1937, at the time, they were boundary pushing in terms of, like, it was the first feature length, like, color animated movie.
Yes.
And, like, what they did at the time, it was nothing short of remarkable. Like, they won the Oscar for it. It was insane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even the new Lion Kings, the technology with that has been sensational. You know how they filmed that? It's like they make this VR world and they basically move around in VR with, like, VR cameras to film this. And it's, like, insane. Like, that's boundary pushing.
Yeah.
This, I feel, was just to use the IP. And the things that, like, look, the big argument for this entire movie, there's no point stepping around it, is the fact that, like, Snow White isn't white. Do you know what I mean? And Snow White... It's just a name. Pure. It's not a case of she's white. It's a case of she's pure.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel Zegler, I feel like, is a pure person.
Oh, completely.
Like, in West Side Story, she's been in, like, she's been in a lot of things.
Mm.
And, like, even as much as people are hating on the movie, they're like, yeah, I know, the story's awful. Like, Dopey talks and he's not supposed to talk and all this stuff. But Rachel Zegler is very good. Do you mean? So it's like, no matter how much they hate it, she's still fantastic.
So she's made lots of comments, like she says, the relationship and the portrayal of the love story between Snow White and Peach and Prince Charming struck her as problematic. Like,
I mean, there is a part where she's passed out and then he comes up and shifts her, which I think in this day and age,
yeah,
bit weird. I know it's like true love's kiss under the thing. It's like bit dodgy. But no, look, this is the issue. My issue was in Snow White. It could have been modernized into a way better movie that Disney wouldn't make. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you think of 10 Things I Hate About You and just like those modern revivals. I was thinking about this. I even came up with a whole plot just to explain to you of what a better movie, a Snow White movie, could be.
Okay, go
so
for it.
So there's this woman, she works in a company and they're not a big fan of her. She got, like, maybe it's her dad's company and they're pushing her out, but, like, she's the one that wants to make everything fair and everyone else wants to, like, hike up the prices.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out some night and they just get her, like, they spike her drink or something, and then they drop her in this random housing estate.
Yeah.
And she wanders into this house in the middle of this housing estate. Mm-hmm. And now it's near a college, that matters. So she wanders in, the doors are unlocked, and she goes in and falls asleep on the sofa. And then, like, these seven lads get home from a night out and they're like, why is there a girl on the sofa? And they're just, like, poking her to kind of wake her up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like they're the seven lads. Do you know? So it's like they're like their maturity is stunted.
Yes. And they're students.
And they're students.
So, like, one of them is doing like a low grade course.
One of them's doing becoming a doctor. So he can be doc. So like in the movies he's a doctor of like geology or something. But it's like he could be like, look, I there's a situation that happens, like, I only know like as far as like arms or something. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, and then Grumpy could be someone that's he finished college like 2 years ago, but he's had his heart broken. He never got over it.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
True. And then Dozy could be someone who never goes to college and just sleeps through everything.
Yeah.
Brian.
But like something like that, it's like a modern thing. It's a comedy. It's lighthearted. It's like realistic,
but as you
but
said,
still
Disney,
with the same values.
But Disney was never going to do that.
Disney would never make that because it's not as, you can't make merch from that.
No,
but it would
you
be
can't.
A much better movie.
Now let's take us out of the mix and let's put kids into it.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is just a movie that you'll bring your kid to and they'll absolutely love it?
See, I think this is a movie you'll bring your kid to and they'll enjoy it.
Okay.
But I don't think they'll absolutely love it.
So they won't be, like, you know, they won't be going down the Frozen route with it. You know, it won't be something that's watched again and again. Or Wicked even,
well,
you know,
Frozen
that's caused so much conversation.
Frozen was made for the era that it's in. Mm. You know, like, and like the cold, like, didn't bother me anyway. But there's the songs from Snow White, High Hope, straight up banger.
High Hope.
Certified classic. But then the rest of them is like,
I don't know any other ones.
I couldn't tell you. I watched the movie. I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know there's a Princess Problems one. And I remember thinking, this is okay. I like kind of like this one.
Okay.
But like the Hi-Ho was like clear of the rest of them.
Okay.
So it's like, I don't know. And do you know what annoyed me the most? The dwarves don't do much.
Do they not?
Not really. They're kind of just there. They're kind of just a featured character. But they don't really, they're not the main, like it's Snow White, obviously. Then it's like the prince, I would say, and then it's the dwarves.
And in the book, like, they love Snow White so much, you know?
Yeah, though they are the same in this, but they just don't do much. And then, I don't know, I just felt like it didn't have the heart.
Okay.
Like, it might have been, like, a child might go to it and they'll enjoy it, but they're not going to come back to it in 15 years. Like, this is why
this
I loved
is classic.
It.
Classic.
Like, when I watch Shrek, I'm like, it has so much heart, you know? It's it comes from a real place of emotion, whereas this is just aesthetic.
Okay.
Do you know?
Rachel to one side, let's talk about her wicked stepmother, Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
How does she fare in it? I presume she's not in it for much because...
She's in it a good bit.
Like, okay.
Well, she got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
She did.
And everyone's saying it's not justified because she was good as Wonder Woman. But is she like an icon of Hollywood? No, she's
no,
not. She's not an icon of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I think that it was, I just think it wasn't a justified thing. I feel like this, the press run for this, she hasn't been involved in anything. I think that was her only kind of contribution. And like, she's in Fast and Furious, actually. She was all right in that.
Okay.
But right. I don't know. Like, she's all right.
Yeah.
Everyone keeps making the point of Gal Gadot is so much more good looking than Rachel, that why was she jealous of her? It's like, well, no, it's not that she, like, it's because she's younger and fairer. It's
exactly.
not like everyone's focusing on looks. It's like, it's about being the fairest, as in mm-hmm. the, as in the, like, the kindest person. Because, like, there's a good while where it's still the queen, and then Rachel does something nice. She releases the prisoner dude, and then it's like, oh, she's the fairest one of all. And the whole thing is not about looks, and everyone's making it about looks.
They are just scratching the surface, Brian. You know? Let's give it some black puddings.
I'd give it like a 6. It wasn't a film that I was massively looking forward to. The first Snow White isn't like a movie that I love or anything. So I wasn't going in being like,
it's a bit before your time anyway.
Yeah, it's like 60 years before I was born. But like, it's a good, like, it was an alright movie. It was like, I've seen so many movies. It's like, it's just one of those ones that in a year's time you're like, oh yeah, I remember that. I was like, well, you remember a scene of that? We'll be here chatting about Rachel Ziegler and whatever. And I'd be like, oh yeah, she was in Snow White, of course. It's like, oh yeah, I remember she did that. And but I feel like the controversy is what people are going to remember, not the film.
Unfortunately. Know? 6 black puddings out of 10 for Disney's reimagining, rebooting, whatever you're having yourself of Snow White, Rachel Ziegler, Gal Gadot. See you later.
Happy Mother's Day.
Brida.
Brida.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.